We started talking about these three last week and kind of just grouped them together because what you see here in Genesis and in the last half of Genesis, you see Abraham's descendants starting to move forward and fulfill the promises that God made to them. And, you know, we're looking at it from a geographical standpoint. And I think we started on this last week and we ran out of time, but about Isaac as he became an adult, moving to a place, west to Gerar, and most of these hopefully you're able to see up on the screen there, because it talks about him being told not to go to Egypt. So let's turn over to Genesis 25, and if somebody can read verse 25:11, and then somebody grab Genesis 26 verse 2 and 26 verse 11.
After the death of Abraham, God blessed Isaac his son, and Isaac settled at Beer-Ahai.
Okay. All right. So Isaac's still living there when it talks about his father died. And if you look up, I don't have that one on the screen, do I? Okay. Well, let's go on in 26:2 and 26:11. Does anybody have 26:2? Just read it out if you have it.
And the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in the land of which I shall tell you."
Okay. And then 26:11. I don't have glasses, so that's why I'm asking you guys to read. I can't remember to bring them, so. Okay, so if you're looking at your material, so all these verses make sense together, it's just kind of showing a progression of Isaac and some of the things that he did and some of the places that he was. So he's dwelling kind of in the south part of, or the east of, or west of the Dead Sea and in this area here. And as you think about where he's moving, just like with Abraham, God is using the land and God is using his wisdom to direct where his people need to go. There were times that, you know, we didn't touch on them all specifically. There were times when God told Abraham, you need to go down to Egypt, or Abraham knew where to go because of famine, and he went back and forth in some of those places. And we see one of the points that we made last week, as Abraham went in and out of the land of Canaan specifically, what did he often do when he stopped places? We brought this up last week, but does anybody remember? Yeah, built an altar and worshiped God. And so made a point of sometimes renaming a place, and then that's what we refer to it in the Bible story. But keep in mind that wasn't the place, that wasn't the name that the place had. The people of the land had named some of these places and some of these cities, but as the Bible story begins to unfold and we see Christ come through the seed of Abraham, just as he has promised, we see Abraham stopping in these different places. He builds an altar to God. He worships. He names that place. And then that's what we begin to refer to it to in the Bible story. And eventually, as the children of Israel come into the land and, you know, they begin to overtake the land, those names kind of change in that sense, because you have the greater people who are in the land building on those things that their ancestors started. And Abraham does that in several places. Same with Isaac. We'll see in a couple of places where, you know, he moves from place to place and sometimes stops, and we see it mentioned that, you know, he worships or builds an altar there. Jacob does the same thing. So I want to keep that in mind as we see the land developing into the promised land. And this is happening over, you know, periods of hundreds of years as people are growing and nation and their families are getting bigger. We see God directing and helping Isaac, you know, tells him not to go to Egypt, for whatever reason. And, talks about him later moving here to Rehoboth because the men of Gerar grew jealous of him. Why were the men growing jealous of him? Yeah, he's blessing him, right? Yeah, you're on the right track. Yeah. Yeah, not just because he was a great guy, you know, and it was a good looking guy or something. You know, God was blessing him. He was prospering. He was becoming wealthy. And remember, he is still, when we think about Isaac and Abraham and Jacob at this point, are they the main inhabitants of Canaan right now? Shake your head this way. No, they're not. They're foreigners. in this land, right? And sometimes we think, when we start reading this story, we think, well, you know, they're in the land that God promised, and they're kind of in control. They're the big shots there. No, God is blessing them. God's taking care of them. They're foreigners here. The land is full of other people. It's full of mostly the descendants of Ham, the Canaanites and the Jebusites and the Perizzites and some of these other ones that have, you know, settled here. The Philistines come to be a thorn in the children of Israel's side. Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, at this point in history, they are just, they're visitors. They're foreigners. So that's why it makes, I think that comments like this are important. You know, Isaac is being careful. He's moving to another place because, you know, he's not looking for trouble is the sense I get. And but God is taking care of him, and helping with some of those things. So Beersheba is another place that we find him going to, talks about Abimelech coming and making a treaty with him. He also recognized that though they are foreigners and strangers in the land at this time, and Hebrews mentions that as well, they are still someone to be reckoned with. They're up and coming, you might say. I mean, they're wealthy. They're doing well. God is prospering them. And you find, you know, Abimelech coming to make a treaty with him. He made a treaty with Abraham and talks about earlier in Genesis. We mentioned that. And Beersheba is becoming more established as, you know, the southern border of Palestine as we know it. And so you see Isaac kind of in this region for, you know, a decent portion of his life. So Isaac had two sons. I should have asked who they were before I flipped the screen, but Esau and Jacob, in case you can't read. And, you know, again, we're not getting into the specifics of the story, but, you know, Esau, the hunter, Jacob cared for the flocks. And what does Esau do? Esau marries a woman of the land, and that was a grief to Isaac and Rebekah. And so what does Rebekah want for Jacob? Anybody remember? What's that? Well, before that, you're right. That's true. Eventually he gets the birthright, but I guess I should have been more specific. Isaac married a woman of the land. What does Rebekah want for Jacob? Right. She wants him to marry someone of their people. We go back and kind of keep the line pure, because we see what happens with Esau. As if anybody's read ahead, hopefully in the lesson, eventually, you know, what does Esau, where does his heritage end up going? Right. Yeah, they become the Edomites, which later become a problem for the children of Israel sometimes. And they end up developing and growing into a land east of the Jordan River, and they have a nation over there. So Rebekah is looking for Jacob to marry someone else. So Esau is described as a profane man. Let's turn over there and read real quick in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 13. And just kind of keep our context here. So whoever's the fastest gets to Hebrews 12 and verse 13 through 16. Either throw your hand up or start reading.
And make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be healed, or may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Strive for peace with everyone, and for the holiness without which no one will see but the Lord. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. That no one is simply immoral or unholy like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal.
Okay. So the things that, the way that Esau approached things were such that, you know, he's referenced by later writers as a profane man, someone who did something foolish. And the point that I wanted to make about that is, you know, as it relates to our study in geography and history, is the things that, the heritage that we put in place by the things that we do and the decisions that we make day to day really do matter. And they really carry through history sometimes. We have no idea sometimes what impact our decisions are going to make. But look at the simplicity of this decision of Esau, okay? He didn't, from what we read, he didn't have a good attitude about things. Seems to be a little bit hot-tempered. Didn't control himself in that way. You know, we get to the story eventually about, you know, him coming back from hunting and being hungry and selling his birthright to his brother for a pot of soup, basically. I mean, what we learn from that is he was very rash in what he did and did things quickly. And that led to him not abiding in, you know, the wishes of his parents or the path of the patriarchs, marrying someone he shouldn't marry, and that led to a whole nation of people that, you know, then were sometimes a problem for the children of Israel. And think about the quick decisions that led him there. So, you know, the things that we do each day and the decisions that we make matter. And it's just important to recognize that, because history points out different things like this. There's different interesting things as you look, especially in the Old Testament, of things like that happened. It mentions Jeroboam, which we'll get to in a couple weeks. And so many times through the Old Testament, as it talks about the kings who are evil, it refers back several times to Jeroboam, who caused Israel to sin. There's like 39 times that you see that. So the decisions that we make and the things that we do matter, and they resonate through history. Yeah, Alan? Yeah, should have. Yeah. Yeah.
And it didn't work out because of the money. And just actually doesn't run there.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to really, you know, is it a mindset to serve God or a mindset to serve yourself? You know, and we see what Abraham was like, and you see the difference in Esau. So just think about that sometimes when you're faced with a decision that you think, well, does this really matter that much? I'm just going to do what I want here. Sometimes those small decisions lead to people being named in history as bad examples. So it happens. So just, you know, kind of keep it moving forward, I guess. You know, Rebecca, because of the problem with Esau and Jacob, I guess I didn't touch on that on the screen before. So, you know, what was mentioned here a moment ago, the selling of the birthright, Jacob, and then, you know, when it came time for the birthright to be presented by the father, by Isaac, you know, there's still tension there about that. Rebecca wants Jacob to be able to have it. And, you know, there's the deceit that goes on with how she dresses him and makes sure that he gets that. And so, of course, that causes tension between the brothers. And, you know, here's where you see it's interesting how these things play out and what God records for us. We have at different times the Edomites and different nations come against the children of Israel. Well, look right here, you know, see Esau, the father of the Edomites, Jacob, the father of Israel. You know, the tension starts here and continues. So he threatens to kill him, and Rebekah helps him escape to, here's the Padan Aram, which if you remember back from our study when we were talking about Mesopotamia, one of these words means, anybody? I'm a bad teacher. You don't remember. Between the rivers. So that you see the word Aram that means between the rivers. And so you see different things, different cities that are put out there that just show you that that's the area that's being talked about. So, he escapes to Padan Aram, which is up in, you know, the upper part of Mesopotamia. Just, you know, probably just on the edge of, if you go up here and kind of around, that's about where that is. And you remember in Haran, that's where, Abraham's father stopped and stayed, and settled there as they were moving out of the land of Ur and Abraham was headed to, the land of Canaan. So Jacob goes back to that area, spends the first night in a little village named Luz that was renamed Bethel. And again, here we see the promises repeated to Jacob as he's traveling about that through Abraham and through his seed, the nations of the earth would be blessed and what those things mean. So, you know, as that's continuing on, if you read the story, you know, Jacob ends up working several years there for his uncle Laban to get the wife that he really wanted. We don't have time to go through the story this morning. I encourage you to read through that if you haven't read it in a while, but he ends up leaving that, you know, he spends 20 years there. And you know, that's a few chapters in Genesis. We read the story about what happens, but keep in mind how much time has passed. And hopefully Jacob has matured a little bit in 20 years, you know, from the younger man that he was fighting with his brother. Now he has four wives, 11 sons, one daughter, host of servants, flocks, and other things, and he's headed back home. You know, as the story goes, he leaves secretly because him and Laban have some conflict. And I'm just pointing out some of the points along the way where they kind of catch up with each other. So, you know, he ends up, as he comes from where he was up in Padan Aram, which is up in this region, you know, coming back around and comes down on this side of the Jordan River. Remember from our studies earlier, because of the mountains that are up there and the passes that are there, you either have to go one way or the other to be on one side of the river or the other. And so he ends up down here in this area, and this is where Laban catches up with him. You know, they have some words and some resolution. Laban's told not to harm him. And because of, you know, the area that's there and the meeting that they have, you know, that area is called Gilead, for the rest of the Old Testament story that we read. So that's how that area comes to be and is then referenced in different stories that we read about the children of Israel and some of the things that they're doing. So as you read on, you know, Jacob, you know, he's there for a little bit. We're not sure I practiced it, but I can't say it now. Mahanaim, whatever. where Jacob meets up with some of the angels of God. You see Jacob have interchanges with a couple of angels in a couple of different times. And just think about where these are. This whole time he spends a lot of time on this Transjordan Plateau, which remember is overlooking a lot of the land of Canaan. If you think about the geography of some of what we talked about. But still concerned that Esau would want to kill him. You know, that's still in his mind. We see him, you know, continuing to travel. And Esau and him do run into each other. As Esau comes north and meets up with him. And, you know, Edom ends up being in this region. Well, down here, I'm sorry. That's Moab. Moab, Ammon, and the Edomites. That we often read about and hear about, just so you have an idea of where those are. You know, so Esau ends up coming up here to meet with Jacob in that way. And Jacob's name at this point in history gets changed to Israel. So, again, if you didn't pick up the material, I'm flying through this because of time so that we can kind of see the big picture of things. So there's a lot of details in there. And the lesson material has the different references through the book of Genesis that point out exactly where these things are happening and why some of them are named that way. This is just a general overview as you watch, you know, Jacob travel over these, you know, probably around 20 to 25 years all this happens, including the time that he spends working for Laban, traveling north, staying up there, coming back down now with his family. He's a greater force to be reckoned with as he's coming into the land as well. He's got a big family. He's got 12 sons. He's starting to build wealth, and God changes his name at this point because we see that through him, we're going to see this part of the Bible story, be fulfilled. So there I should have advanced one slide as I was talking, but in Genesis 33:17, if you're still there in Genesis, let's read that one real quick and just verify what we're talking about there. Genesis 33 and verse 17. It says, but Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built himself a house and made booths for his livestock, and therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. And you go on to read from there. He talks about him coming safely to the city of Shechem as well. So remember Shechem across the river from Succoth. So this is a place that you can pass through the area when you look at the bigger picture of the map. Who, when they first came into the land, came across right through here and stopped for the first time in Shechem. Anybody remember? He's related to Jacob. I'll give you two guesses. One starts with I and one starts with A. Abraham. So when Abraham came into the land, if you remember, as he journeyed, and we're trying to think about the way that he probably came, you know, he came down from Haran, where his father stayed, came down this way, came across the Jabbok River, and probably stopped in Shechem, as best we can tell, because that's one of the first cities that it talks about where he stopped and built an altar. So you see Israel now coming back into the land and starting to settle and following the same path. Just some interesting parallels that you see as you kind of look at some of those things. Verses that we quickly read over, and we're just reading the story, but if you kind of stop and trace the steps, it's just interesting to see some of the same paths that get followed. So it talks about, you know, there, if you keep reading in Genesis, that he crosses and buys land in Shechem. So near where Abraham came into the land the first time. Different things happen to Jacob. He ends up moving his family down to Bethel, which is, you know, renamed from Luz that we talked about before. And, you know, after leaving Bethel, heading south, you know, this is where his wife dies, and she's buried. Here's just an interesting fact. She's buried in a place that would later become the city of Bethlehem. Who else do we find that is born in Bethlehem? Jesus, later in the Bible story. And so just some interesting facts to see where things are happening and how those things are continued to correlate. We start to get into the story of Joseph a little bit, and I'm just mentioning these things quickly to get us to where the children of Israel are, as we're going to talk about next week. We just have about 5 minutes left here. So Jacob joins his father Isaac at Hebron. And remember, Isaac was pretty old, or was old enough to give the birthright before Jacob left. And so he's an old man, a really old man now, if you think about the time that has passed. Jacob's favorite child was the next to the youngest, Joseph. He's the older son of Rachel, and Rachel was Jacob's favorite wife. But, you know, there we see the wisdom of God, one man, one woman, instead of several wives. There's no favorites if there's just one. Well, there's one favorite, I guess. But the, you know, that's when, if you remember the story, when he went to work for Laban, it was Rachel that he was working for, but you know, that's where him and Laban had conflict, and he was tricked and had his other daughter put in there. Laban put his other daughter Leah in there. So now Joseph, the oldest son of Rachel, Jacob's favorite wife, very dear to Jacob because of that. You can imagine the connection that's there and how much Jacob had to go through to just get Rachel. And then if you remember the story, Rachel couldn't have children for a while. So then when she does, this is a very precious son of Jacob's. And so it's a very influential part of his life and his history. Joseph is known to be a very righteous man. We're not told exactly why he's different like that than his brothers, but, you know, if you start to think about the situation, Jacob is spending a lot of time with him as well because of how endearing he is to him, probably helping him understand and teaching him some things about what God has said and about the promises that were made. So, you know, there's some connections that you know, you can think about that may have been possible there. And so, you know, as the story goes, Jacob, again, he's living in the land. He's got flocks. He's got people grazing. He was in Bethel. His sons and some of his flocks are up here in Dothan, sends Joseph to check on them. Joseph, you know, as he's going up, didn't find them at Shechem where they were supposed to be, goes on up to Dothan. And this is where you have the incident where the sons, who are jealous of Joseph, decide it's time to get rid of Joseph. And so we're going to, sell him into slavery. And so when you think about that, you know, the oldest brother can convinces them not to kill him, but to sell him into slavery. They throw him into the pit and then sell him to the Ishmaelites and Midianites merchants on their way to Egypt. So if you look back here, I don't have the paths on here, but if you remember the different trade routes, there was one that went this way, there was one that went along the coastline, and we don't have the topographical map, but there was one that went right down through the pass up here in the mountains and came over and went down through the hill country. So on that trade route is probably where these guys were traveling, and that's why they were able to, you know, that interaction happened, and They sold Joseph into slavery. And so, just kind of interesting to put that together as to, you know, as you're thinking about where they were when this happened, and they were right along one of those trade routes, most likely, and that's why they, end up selling Joseph into slavery, and that's how it happened. So Joseph is taken into slavery and has to travel in, as a slave, about 250 miles down into Egypt, where he is going to be sold there, sold to Potiphar, and we think about that story and what happened there. And just, in these last few minutes kind of catch us up to, Joseph was faithful. God blessed him. And in Egypt, there was lots of different things that happened. Joseph continuing to follow God and God blessing him, making him prosper, even though he goes to jail, for an incident with Potiphar's wife. But God is using him because he's a faithful and righteous man and God can use him. Joseph's patient. Joseph remains faithful and comes to power in Egypt. Not something that probably the brothers who were going to kill him and decided to just sell him ever thought would happen. So again, think about the decisions that we make and, the choice to be faithful and how that plays into to what can be used. We're going to have to stop there because we're out of time. We've got maybe two more slides that are going to get us into the children of Israel. And next week we'll be looking more specifically at a bigger map with all of the different places that they traveled as they came out of the land. So thanks for your attention this morning.